Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Gankish with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR. Revenue Marketer Radio. Every Thursday at 1 o'clock, we meet to talk to a real live revenue marketer and learn tips and tricks on how they've made that transition from traditional marketing all the way over to revenue marketing. Before I introduce our guest, let me take a moment just to define the term revenue marketer, because we have a lot of listeners, and I hope some of our Toronto folks are listening today, who have not heard this term before. And basically, a revenue marketer is a specific type of marketer. Just like you've got product marketing, now you've got revenue marketing. And these marketers have revenue or revenue-related accountability through the kinds of campaigns, communications, and digital interactions they set up. They are responsible for the top of the sales funnel and interacting and nurturing with leads until they are sales ready. And they all use some type of marketing automation platform integrated with CRM to power their revenue marketing practice to get those revenue results. And every revenue marketer that we have on our show began exactly where you are today. So whether you're thinking about this stuff, in the middle of it, or just trying to take your game to a whole new level, the revenue marketers that we have on the show are here to share their journey, their successes, and their gotchas so that your journey to revenue marketing will be quicker and a whole lot smoother. I can't tell you how pleased I am to introduce today's guest, Tara Condon, who is a senior business analyst at Genzyme Biosurgery. Oh, good, I got through that whole name without messing up. Let me give you her background, and then let's begin talking to Tara. She, again, is working with Genzyme BSS in Boston. She's no stranger to Salesforce.com, as her background goes deep into operations and data, which truly gives her a unique and a high-value perspective on how to most effectively leverage marketing automation. She's something between an analyst and also a power user, but she really works to provide sales with the insight that they need from marketing so that they can be highly effective. Most recently, we were very pleased to listen to her present at the Boston Salesforce.com user group. I think it's one of the largest user groups for Salesforce.com in the country. And she was talking about how her company added Eloqua to their marketing tool set, and more specifically, how it works with Salesforce.com. She also spoke at Dreamforce twice in 2009. Tara lives in the Boston area and spends most of the summer at her family home on Cape Cod. Tara, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It is such a pleasure. But why don't you tell us a little bit about Genzyme and your company, and kind of how you got started in this role that involved marketing automation.
So I was brought in to Genzyme, they had chosen Salesforce.com, and then were deep into their implementation, or at the beginning of their implementation, I should say. They had done their due diligence, you know, picked the application, and were configuring it. So I was brought in to train, finish out the implementation, and then stay on to manage the application. So when we first got, marketing was not part of the phase one, if you will, and a lot of these implementations are done in phases. But then the phase two was, okay, can we bring in the marketing piece? And so traditionally I had always worked with just campaigns and not really with leads, but since we had a website and we had a form that was generating interest, because it's easy to do, or, you know, Salesforce is very plug and play, I said, okay, let's turn this on. Let's see how this works. And so we did that, and when we did that, we got all sorts of leads coming through, but since we didn't have the Eloqua or just even the marketing automation, the leads we were getting weren't the best. That was our first kind of go at it, and it didn't work out the way we would have liked. It overwhelmed the sales team. They were getting all these leads, duplicates. They weren't qualified. They weren't quantified. The information, you know, you can really put in junk if you want to on any of these forms. So then we decided, once we did that, kind of went back and rethought what was our ultimate goal, what does the sales team need, and that's kind of how we got started on that, this path.
Interesting. Okay, so you really came in as part of a Salesforce.com implementation to really help them maximize their investment and kind of what they were doing with Salesforce, And then once you were in, said, wow, let's do some marketing stuff out of Salesforce and see what happens.
Exactly. It was a natural progress. It was a natural progression.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and when was that? Was that in 2009 or 2010?
So that was actually, we implemented Salesforce.com in October of 2008, and then we took our first pass at, you know, kind of just getting leads out there, starting to just turn on the lead module within Salesforce.com that next February 2009, and then integrated it fully probably a few months later. And then saw the influx of those leads, and then we went back and took another look at it January of last year.
Okay, so you were using the campaign module and the leads module in Salesforce.com, but that really wasn't doing it for you. And
it wasn't.
Was it the fact that was kind of like the tipping point for you guys? The fact that the salespeople were overwhelmed and they felt like they weren't getting quality leads.
They weren't. And you know, and that was something we had to kind of look at and say they weren't getting qualified leads. So what do we do? So we looked at it and we decided, okay, we're gonna start over. So we took a look, and this is about last January or even earlier actually, we engaged Cambridge Biomarketing to come in and come up with a plan for us to be able to get the qualified leads that we need and also do the touch points and the call to actions and the outreach to the business. So we engaged Cambridge Biomarketing. They came back in with, we call it an RM campaign, essentially a drip campaign that people would opt in and opt out of. So now that we had the campaign and we went back and we did our due diligence of what we want to do and how we are going to reach out to our call points, now we are saying, all right, once the call points come back to us, how are we qualifying that and what system are we going to use? So I had been working with Salesforce for years, so I knew that there was other marketing automation systems out there, and I knew about Eloqua right away. I've known about it for quite a while. I'd never really used it, but I had been in other places that had. And then I looked for other things and reached out to the Pedowitz Group and to other places to kind of figure out what else we should be looking at. So there was Silverpop, and we also looked at Marketo, and we, at the end of the day, decided on Eloqua because it could meet all the needs that this advertising agency, Cambridge Biomarketing, needed in order to make the campaign that they came up with successful. And so we went with Eloqua.
This is so interesting. And so did Cambridge Biomarketing also have a system that you could have used as well? Were they in the mix?
They were using. They do have a system that they use with all sorts of other people. And the what I was concerned about was that they would build. They wouldn't. The other third party automation system that they use would have built the integration for us with Salesforce.com. Would that have been in real time? Probably not. Would have there been, you know, some bumps in the road? Probably. And I basically said, why are we going to reinvent the wheel when there are systems out there that, when you turn them on, the integration is there. And
yeah.
I'd rather go with that than have to explain to somebody how Salesforce.com works.
Yeah, and I agree, Tara. I love this kind of cycle that you went through, because we see a lot of marketers who are just trying to understand, you know, what kinds of things can I do? So sometimes we meet a marketer and they say, I really don't understand the difference between Salesforce.com or CRM and a marketing automation tool. So that's the first point. And then sometimes we see really great marketing services firms coming in with proprietary software. And to your point, you know, if you're going to be in this for the long haul, it's much better to get something that, you know, is more standard and can easily integrate, especially with Salesforce.com, because that integration is really important. Maybe you could share with our listeners, because, again, I think it's a key point, especially given your great background at Salesforce.com, kind of what you think the differences are between Salesforce.com and a marketing automation system, or even just kind of, in general, CRM and a marketing automation system.
So, the CRM can take you so far, and Salesforce has great functionality, but it is, you know, a relationship management system. And then you have your marketing automation system that can also just take you that so far. But when you put the two together and you get the microsites and the websites and the digital marketing and all and being able to, you know, generate a lead or not generate a lead, and then bring it over, and like, so you have your kind of staging area, which is your marketing automation with your huge list, and then you put your criteria in of what really makes a lead, your qualification, to kind of push it and then create a lead within Salesforce and get that cycle going. That really, you know, both systems are great standalone, but put them together and you have such a great process, and very, very bold and to enrich your data.
I completely agree with that, and it's kind of like 1+1=3 here. And sometimes we'll be working with a marketer, and they'll say, you know, well, do I have to integrate with CRM? And my answer is yes, you have to, because I think you lose so much value if you don't have your marketing automation platform integrated with CRM. Would you not agree with that?
I totally agree with that. There's some places just aren't ready. They're doing one or the other, or the operations team doesn't talk to the marketing team. Somehow there's that disconnect, and it makes for such a great product. And for both products, that, you know, you do spend quite a little bit on both, it makes it worthwhile when they can actually, you know, talk to each other and take you to the next step, which is a qualified lead that in turn can turn to a sale and then some ROI.
So clearly one of the tipping points for going out and taking a look at bringing in a marketing automation system that would integrate well, play well with Salesforce.com was the fact that you really weren't able to get highly qualified leads over to sales. And I'm sure that created issues between sales and marketing. That's kind of a very old story. But now that you've got Eloqua and it's working with Salesforce.com, tell me a little bit about the relationship between sales and marketing today.
Well, the leads are getting generated out, and the sales folks mostly talk to the operations people. But I think that they're pretty, I mean, you'd have to, and again, I don't want to speak for our sales folks, but I think they're pretty happy with the leads they get. We took a lot of time, asked a lot of questions to make sure that we were giving them what they needed, because at the end of the day, the sales, you know, they're out there every day. They're the talent. They're bringing in the business. And so we polled them to see what they were looking for, and there was a few key elements they wanted to know. When they got notified of this lead and what would make it a hot lead. And marketing listened. They, you know, digested it. And when we went out to the consultants that we engaged to explain it to them, we really took it from an idea of, okay, not only the user experience, which would be, you know, the customer and their experience on whatever sort of generation we send out to them or email, but also the sales rep. It has to be easy for them to see. They need to be notified right away. They need to be able to update it using their mobile device and follow up. And so we, from the email to even purchasing the list as opposed to renting the list, purchasing the list, scrubbing it against our current database so that we would be very, we would not get the dupes. If it was in there, it would match up to an existing customer so that they could look at sales and ordering history to kind of get an idea of how they should kind of get the playbook and go out after this lead, and also to qualify it. And we were very... we also listened to them when we said that they were getting too many leads that just weren't any good, and they didn't think that they could really do anything with. So when we put in our, and what you do in Eloqua, when you put in your rating system or your scoring, if you will, we were very cautious that not to make too many leads go to hot. I mean, you're very, you know, this is so cool. This is going to be awesome. Let's make everything hot that comes through, because that means they did X, Y, and Z. But then you need to think, okay, so if you're a sales rep in the field and you're doing a lot of stuff, not just sitting there watching leads come in, you know, we want to make sure that we don't overwhelm them, and that it's only really good information that they're getting. And that was the first steps to, you know, a happy sales team and a happy marketing team.
So I love everything that you guys have done, but I want to ask you some additional questions, because, again, I think it's just a great example of some of the very specific things that you can do to kind of, you know, cross that chasm between sales and marketing. And I literally have a phone conversation set up with someone I recently met as part of the roadshow tour that I'm on with Marketo right now, where he wants to talk about what can you do to get sales and marketing kind of in alignment. So first of all, your first comment, Tara, which I thought was just spot on, is that sales is your customer, right? And you're delivering a product to them, and it's a qualified lead. So would that as the thought process, you then went out to them and tried to understand what it is that they thought would be a hot lead. So specifically, how did you do that? Did you talk to them one-on-one? Did you have a meeting? Did you do a survey? What did you do to try to understand from their perspective what's a hot lead?
So the marketing team created what we call the professional working group, and they are, you know, a representative from each that the manager put in of the team regionally, and a couple other, you know, people, and have I think it's biweekly calls, and you go over new marketing materials and what's going on, but also vetted stuff through them. So if you could have X, Y, and Z, what would you have? We also did some, in meetings and regional meetings, ask the question, okay, guys, this didn't really work for you. What would have made this that much better that you could have had a better conversation in a shorter amount of time in the very, you know, short window you get in front of your customer? What's really going to make the impact? And they said knowing. And you know, again, it's like anything. You know, you ask for the world, and then you bring it back. So we said, you know, let's talk, you know, four really real things that you really, really think would be great. And then, you know, another caveat to this, we did a lot of market research on how, you know, different customers feel about different things, and we were able to integrate those kind of survey questions into our campaigns, which really helped. So how the customer feels about a certain thing, also, you know, do they order? And that was kind of the hard piece, was to scrub your list against your existing database to see if they were already a customer or not and be able to flag that.
Interesting. And so, again, it was a variety of activities that you did, but it began with treating them as your ultimate focus group because they are the ultimate customer.
Yep, exactly.
So let me ask you this. Did marketing get any surprises on how sales responded to these questions around what was a hot lead? Besides, we know they asked for the world, that we know, but was there anything that surprised you about what they told you?
I think that, you know, sometimes you might think that people don't know what they want. They were concise. They knew what they needed. It was impressive.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent. Okay. And so clearly they needed to, easy to see. They had to be able to respond on mobile. They wanted to follow up, and they worked with you on really talking about, you know, what is a hot lead? When is it sales ready? When is a lead ready that I'd be very happy to follow up on?
But so there was a team. It was really a team effort. It wasn't just me. There was a lot of different people here that went through and asked the questions.
Okay.
But ultimately, yeah.
Okay, perfect. And then let's get back to the list and the whole idea of, because I don't want to gloss that over, because I think that's a pretty snazzy piece of work that you guys did. So part of what you did was to provide information to the sales rep around that lead, around past buying history. Is that correct?
So what we did, that we purchased a list from an outside vendor. And so, you know, you can get your big lists from any of your big list vendors, and you usually rent them, and they send the email from there. You give them your information, they send the email, and it kind of goes back around in a different way. Well, we said, actually, we don't want you to have the list. We want the list. We want the email addresses, and we want to be able to take that list and add and scrub against it, make things link up, and be able to use that information that you're giving us on this list that we're buying, make it so that we get as much as we can out of this. And so it took a while for us to scrub against. You know, your lead database is completely separate from your accounts and contacts. We created a related list so if we do find a lead that links to an existing account, there is actually a related list on the account saying, hey, all of these leads are here for this account. And then from there, we were able to do the conversion. I have to also mention that we put a lot of kind of parameters around this because we painstakingly scrubbed this list against our current database, and we want to be really careful. So we don't let anybody convert leads. Sales operations converts the leads if they're put into a certain status. Nobody is allowed to add accounts but sales operations. And we vet everything to make sure that we're not duplicating an account that might have been, you know, a different name, dropped a period, it was Saint, it was ST, it wasn't S-A-I-N-T. So we do that to make sure that, because, you know, garbage in, garbage out, and you want to, the integrity of the database is huge, because if sales get something that doesn't look right, then it could really set off a firestorm.
That's a wow. So only sales operations can add or convert in Salesforce.com. That's very interesting.
Well, we'll tell you that we have a great tool. We use on-demand tools.
Uh-huh.
And so we're able to set up jobs to run, you know, fuzzy dedupes and scrubs and do mass converts based off of rules. So with that, we're able to kind of scrub again. So if something new comes in and they weren't on our list, but they came in because they opted themselves into our programs and they came in through Eloqua and they were rated, but they're not associated, I can, you know, we do a fuzzy match to see if they are indeed a current customer.
So what do you think this emphasis on data quality has done to your demand generation efforts?
Well, so we always were when we first started Salesforce.com, the implementation in 2008, we had come up with these really hardcore rules, right, that only sales operations would add a hospital, and that's only if they placed an order. So our account database is currently only customers that are currently ordering or have ordered since, you know, 2006 or whatever. So, and then we add things in based off of the new orders that come in, we'll add the account. But the lead database, because you know it's separate in Salesforce.com, it's its own kind of thing. Whatever comes in, you kind of scrub it. We had to scrub against that. And so the lead database was really had all sorts of legacy leads from our first attempt when we just kind of flipped the switch and said, come on in. And then so we kept all that in there. So we were trying to scrub against that. So the data integrity within the actual Salesforce CRM, you know, is very, very, very good. And then the lead one, we kind of let it lax a little.
Interesting. Okay. And so so would you say that it's pretty much finished? You've got all the data quality you need, or do you find it's an ongoing effort?
It's an ongoing effort, and this comes from it's constant the evolution. So now we have these great, we're getting these great leads. We have this now. People want to see, they want to hold people accountable and see what's going on. So one request was, I really need to know if my sales reps are following up, or if the doctor, when was the last time the doctor was on a website or something like that. And so it falls off the activity history. But what we saw was that we really needed to be able to count, not from the date the lead was created, because it could have been created a long time ago, but it's kind of been woken up now because there's new activity. So we created two new fields and based off who logs that activity, if it's Eloqua, goes in as physician activity, that the physician is doing something, and if it's the sales rep, then it goes in as sales rep activity. So we've taken the activity and broken them out into two buckets to track them a little differently. And that was
very
that came down
smart.
From yeah, it was it
yeah.
was actually pretty cool. That came down from an RSD who said, this says that this lead is 600 days old. How can that possibly be? We just started the program, you know, 6 months ago, and we said, oh right, that's going to be a problem. And we had to go back and look at that, and I went to Salesforce, and we figured out a way that we could, you know, using formula fields, we counted that out. It was a little tricky, it was clunky, but we got it done, and now it works great. Then we had another request that the lead status. So I want to know how long that's been sitting in this lead status. And we went to Salesforce because that's my go-to. That's my sweet spot, right? I'm going to go to Salesforce. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we took it as far as we could, and it was like, you know, I think that's going to be some custom code. And I was like, all right, well, let's just wait a minute then. So then I called Petowitz Group, Jay, my new best friend, and said, so I know we can take it this far in Salesforce, but I feel like I heard something or somewhere that we could probably do this in Eloqua. And right away, oh, yeah, we can. And, you know, he got excited and off and running. And I'm, you know, the big geek, too. So I'm like, that sounds so awesome. And next thing you know, we have, like, these things in Eloqua calculating the lead status date, pushing over to the lead. And now you have this great information on the lead record, not only telling you, you know, physician activity, sales activity, but how long was it in cold? And then what moved it to warm? And it was in warm for a month, but then once it went to hot, it was converted. So it's kind of...
That's pretty amazing. So when you were able to take a look at how things were progressing kind of like through the funnel and how long they were sitting there, What did you learn, or what did you do about it?
Well, because we're just about a year at this program, we're still kind of getting those metrics and thinking about the next generation, or if you know how you with implementation, you have phase two. I mean, I'm always thinking of the next generation of this system and what we did. So we have the information. We have so much, we have more data than we know what to do with at this point. So we just need to sit down and, you know, kind of pull on the brake again and say, let's do what's the next thing. I will tell you, and I don't know if you're going to ask me about any mistakes or what we would have done differently. I will tell you that we started small. We thought we were starting small with the just really building to a certain call point, a certain group, and with a very, very certain campaign or program. And now that we're getting into a year of that, when now more things, because this worked out, people want other call points. We want other programs being run. It's not all under this one. How do we go back and kind of fix and make it make everything more general? Because everything was so specific to this one thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a project.
Yeah, that having to go back and redo some of that is, but the thing that I really like about your approach, Tara, is, again, I keep talking about this roadshow tour I'm on with Marquette, only because it's 15 cities, and oh my gosh, the marketers we meet are absolutely amazing, and we're also doing a CMO roundtable. But again, one of the folks on the tour with us is Jim Linsfold of the Linsfold Group, who wrote the book Marketing ROI, really a great selling book on how you measure the impact of marketing. And one of the things that he talks a lot about is, you know, how can you report or predict if you don't have a baseline? And if you haven't been, you know, tracking these kinds of metrics before, you know, like lead status and how long is it sitting there, you know, it's kind of hard to analyze it when you don't have a baseline. So it takes a while just to get a baseline in place. And it sounds like that's kind of been your approach. Let's get this baseline in place. Let's learn what we don't know. Then we can make some informed decisions around what we need to change.
Right. And we definitely are ready to do that, I believe. We have, you know, even on our metrics, or I'm sorry, not on metrics, on our scoring for the leads, I think we're ready to go back and say, okay, I think we can open we're not going to open the floodgates. We're not letting it all in. But I think we can loosen up a little bit and make more things hot and move things out of the cold bin maybe into the warm because of these certain different things, as opposed to, you know, we were very conservative originally.
And Tara, I would also think that given your background, which you've got this real focus on analytics and data, that's probably invaluable to the company because you're the one that's looking at this stuff, you know, creating the baselines, taking a look at the data, and figuring out, you know, where can you go next to improve all of this.
Mm-hmm. We do, yeah. I'm constantly thinking about it. How we can, what can we do next? Oh, that doesn't really look right. Let me go back and take a look at this. And I enjoy it. It's so sad.
Well, I think you told me earlier today that you were thinking about it in the shower this morning.
Yeah.
So that's temptation right there.
Oh, it's so sad.
But it's so fascinating, you know? Once you began taking a look at this data, if you can really begin to use this data to make informed decisions around how to improve the business, it's kind of like you couldn't see one day and you can see the next. It is the data that you get from the integration of Salesforce.com and Eloqua is so rich, and it's for the first time as a marketer you've got key data that you can make real business decisions on. I'm like you. I'm constantly fascinated with the data and what we could actually do with it. So let's talk about, your next generation of marketing, your next generation of your deployment of Salesforce.com and Eloqua. So you've had the integration now for about a year, and as you said, you turn stuff on, you let it run for a while, you begin to gather data. So what are some of the key areas that you're going to be taking a look at tweaking? You had mentioned something about campaigns, and you'd also mentioned something about scoring, but what's going to be your approach to going back and beginning to make changes?
So I think we're first, you know, we're going to have to deal with some record type issues for different customer types, so that we're, you know, for the marketing or the targeting, we're sending to the right to the right people. So, for example, if we're going to do a woman's focused customer, we want to make sure that we're talking to the female and not the male.
Mm-hmm.
So going through and kind of putting in more record types, also just more general segregations of the different lists, because the programs are all very different of who's going to get what. We've also started, now that we have the different analytics and data, we can do more targeted programs and campaigns on our messaging and creative, and what gets people to click, what doesn't get people to click, that sort of really interesting stuff. And we've done so many of these that we have some really good data now that we can say, okay, so for this bucket of people, they're going to get this targeted message with this graphic, and it's going to point them here for an educational, you know, FYI, whatever. And so Cambridge Biomarketing really has been really great at taking all of the information that we've gotten off of Eloqua and what they've clicked and all that sort of stuff. I've been able to say, all right, well, this button here that said, you know, get incentive, or this one that said contact a rep, the contact a rep did much better than this other one. So why don't we redo our web and other materials to kind of match that, since it's getting more traffic. And so that's kind of like the next generation, is to be more targeted, and knowledge is power, and we have this knowledge now kind of at our fingertips of how we should probably progress. And it's stuff that we didn't know a year ago that we know now, and it's because we were able to capture it with the marketing automation, but also get, you know, the input from the sales team of what actually should be converted and what's working.
And again, you are just like best practices personified, Tara. And but if someone had come to you at the very beginning of your Eloqua implementation, and if they had said, you know, it's going to take a year before you've got really good data and really know what you're going to be doing, how would you have responded to that?
I would have totally agreed with them, but I have a history with this. I think somebody who probably didn't know CRM or marketing automation would have been like, well, that doesn't make any sense. We should be able to get stuff right away. Also, I think that marketers are just used to buying their information, their market research, mm-hmm. buying their lists. You know, there's lots of people out there that are making a lot of money off selling, you know, really great lists. And mm-hmm. the fact that we can kind of buy those lists too, because we're never going to stop that, but also with those lists, make them even better for ourselves, I think is great. I think that when I said, listen, I don't think we should rent this list and have the list house send out the email. I think we should purchase the stuff so that we can do with it what we want and import mm-hmm. it into our own system. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, you know, it's up at a certain time, and we're going to have to export whatever didn't work for us. But
right.
I think that was a first step. And when we asked the question of our advertising agent, they kind of looked at us and said, huh, I don't know if we can do that. I'm like, well, can you see?
Yeah.
Because that seems like that would be better.
I love your approach. And again, you have, you know, some years of experience in doing this. But what we find is that, you know, in the early days of using marketing automation and CRM, you know, getting that baseline, getting enough data, watching enough behavior so you even know how people are responding to things and how to rethink about and redo content. I mean, all of those things are, just so incredibly important to put into place. So one of the things that we had talked about in the pre-brief, Tara, which I was really interested in, was you had made some comments around, you know, what kind of content do people click on, right? I mean, how do we judge that? So can you tell us about what you learned about what your prospect base clicks on?
They were educational materials. Which was, I mean, educational materials versus any of the other kind of things we asked them to click on. That was really, you know, this population is really, really into being educated and in getting those sort of you know, books or whatever they need to make themselves better at their jobs. And that was very interesting to us.
So I would imagine that once you probably thought some of that was true, but you probably found out it was more true than you thought. Did it change your content strategy?
It did. Changed kind of how our approach, and we also had some stuff that didn't go very well at all. I mean, nobody was upset, but we didn't get any clicks. and that's humbling.
Well, yeah, I tell people, and hey, this happens to everybody. And what I tell people about marketing automation is that, you know, no marketers are going to be killed in the process.
Right.
So, you know, just, you know, try stuff and absolutely positively see what happened. So, so one of the things you found out about content is that this particular group was very interested in being educated.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find out about how they responded to graphics or what kind of messaging they responded to?
So we tried several different messaging, but you know there was market research that was done beforehand as well. But we always did whenever we were doing our next generation of program, we always had a couple different graphics and content and sent out to you know just randomly to different people. And that was something we were going to do anyways. But honestly, you mentioned best practices, and that's something that I always mention. Well, a best practice would for us to be do it this way rather than that. And I knew best practices as far as CRM implementations, but marketing automation implementations, best practices were really new to me. So that was really nice. Again, the consulting group, Hedowitz, was able to tell us, you know, the best practices. And one of those was send a few random emails, you know, here, there, and see what tests the best, and then let's go with that one.
So did you do any tests and had results that kind of surprised you?
Very little surprises me.
Okay.
So I think this whole year has been a nice surprise that we're getting the information that we need. Maybe since I'm more educated on this, the next year I'll be like, oh, okay, I didn't think that was going to happen, but that makes sense.
So, Tara, how do you explain to senior management that it's going to take a year for you to really get optimized?
Softly.
Softly?
Yeah.
We can go after the low-hanging fruit right now and get some immediate results, but the really big impact is,
right, like gently and also you know, this is a work in progress. You know, nothing is, okay, this is done. We turn the key and we're going to walk away from it. It's ever-evolving. And that was really important because especially for the sales guys to know, okay, so that didn't work. And knowing that even though we did the stuff at the beginning and really built this for them, even ongoing, you know, with the special fields for the managers, you know, how long the lead status, but also like, okay, this isn't working, so let's do this. We didn't show that to you because we didn't think that you guys needed to see that information, but if you do, I'll expose those fields right now, done. And how we were able, you know, kind of as a team, make it better. And I think that then the year doesn't seem so long when everybody knows that it can get better.
Yeah, and everybody's working together,
mm-hmm.
and everybody's clued in on what's going on. I completely agree.
And so again, with the professional, working group that the
uh-huh.
marketing people that the marketing had and updated them, you know, it makes it helps make people feel like their voice is being heard. So that's always great to have a steering committee of some sort.
Okay, I completely agree with that. So let's talk about metrics, and I want to talk about metrics in a couple of ways. I want to talk about what kinds of things you were measuring when you had just Salesforce.com, and then what kinds of things you're measuring now that you've got Eloqua added to the mix.
So we were measuring, you know, when it was just Salesforce, measuring how many leads are coming in and how many leads are being converted or acted on. And that wasn't really a fair metric because the lead wasn't that great. So just because the lead was created didn't mean it was, you know, a real lead or that it was even, you know, something that a low-hanging fruit. So with Eloqua, what we did was, again, we stopped the bleeding. We stopped, you know, closed the floodgates a little bit and only let qualified leads through. And we are really watching follow-up and conversion. And if people are putting them in a certain status, they're getting converted. And we're also watching, you know, how the customers come back and see the different, you know, click around, look at our websites, how they respond to some of the information and opt themselves in. So all of that, right now there's so much of it, we don't have a real targeted metric, like one metric that we look at, kind of looking at it holistically so we can get an idea and learn from it and move in. And so then we can say, love this metric, love this one, how can we get a better one? So we have 10 lead sources. Let's go down to 5 and then have a sub lead source. and kind of do it that way. And that's kind of what I said before about going back, kicking the tires and saying, okay, we looked at it really targeted for this one program. Now that we're opening it up to different call points, customers, and programs, how are we gonna do that so that our metrics don't get skewed?
Okay. So let me ask you this, and I love the idea. Do you guys track by lead source?
Yes.
Okay. You said you had about 10 lead sources that you guys track?
We did, and that's back way back. We had about 10, and then we pared them down to statuses too. We pared back the status a lot too.
Okay, so you pared back the number of lead sources and the number of statuses just to kind of make things easier to report on
if you have too many, everything looks like 1%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. That's right. And it doesn't mean anything to anybody really. Okay, so one of the things that we had talked about earlier And you kind of tell me the kind of things that you guys are tracking now through marketing automation makes me think back to the question. When you guys pass a lead over to sales, how was that lead passed, and what data is what does the rep see? What kind of data?
So the only way a lead gets generated is if the customer has opted themselves in to our program. And that means, and that's essentially the drip campaign, and they're going to continue to get educational information every so many weeks through this drip campaign. And once that's done, then the lead is created. And what's on the lead record is does the customer order? How much do they order? What do they order? And then also, if they've opted themselves in, then they've completed a segmentation. What segment are they in? And what is their how are they using our product? And then just lots of information of anything else we got. So where they are. Name, anything that was on the list that we purchased, right down to gender, we keep. And pass over, and then it gets scored based off of what they do, and then an email is sent right away with any of the real key information off the lead record is in that email, so they already have it on their device, and they're like, oh, okay, and and if they happen to be at that client at the time they get it, all the better because they can go seek this person out.
How cool is that? That's very cool. Oh yeah, so and so. So that's again, what I love about what you're doing is because you've taken the time to get the right kind of data, and because you've got repeat orders, being able to also send over that order information is invaluable for a salesperson. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Invaluable. And so you send them out an email when the lead gets created for them. Do they also get a task in Salesforce.com, or you just send it out through Outlook?
Nope, we sent it out to Outlook. We don't use Task at this point. We're not there yet as far as tasking things out. But they are, they are tasked by their managers to follow up within a certain time frame.
Okay. So what has happened? I mean, when you talk to the salespeople today, versus when they were just getting stuff from CRM, from Salesforce.com, what would they say about the types of leads that they're getting today?
So we get, we have some feedback that we get, and we have a few really nice success stories regarding, a lead that came through that, there's a few that said that they weren't hot leads, but they still kind of followed up and just sent an email and ended up getting an appointment. So, we definitely have some great success stories coming from the field, and that's really what we need, because otherwise, you really don't know how people are feeling, and so, but we've had quite a few really great success stories about the information and the information that was provided to them, and how, it was great because it came in as cold, but it was there, and I had this within Salesforce.com, there's this great template that I was able to send out, and I got, this response. So, the two systems working together to make a successful sale is nice. It's a nice story to hear.
That is absolutely very, very nice. So so I wanted to also go back and talk just a few minutes around. I kind of seem obsessed over the idea of passing the lead, but people are always so curious and interested in knowing about that. Do you have any type of service level agreement in place between marketing and sales?
No.
No? So if you send them a lead you haven't said and you need to follow up on this lead within a certain amount of time and do a certain amount of thing in Salesforce.com?
Oh, no. Oh, no, no. We do. I meant like a formal service. I'm like, service, like something we sign between each other? Not really. We do have...
In blood, preferably.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no. No, we do have criteria that they, about following up within a certain, depending on the rating and within that, what they need to do in a certain time period. And that's why it was so important for us to have those fields that told us how long a rating was in a certain status, because that's how we're measuring the follow-up.
So give me an example of what some of those ratings and time periods are.
So a hot lead, you know, they get the email, and they're only getting an email for the hot leads. They need to follow up, do something. Could be send an email, could be a phone call, could be something. But some sort of activity needs to be logged against that lead within 2 weeks or 5 days.
Okay.
I think it's 5 days.
Okay.
For a warm lead, same type of thing. In 2 weeks.
Okay.
We don't measure the conversion because very often it can take a while to get to where you feel you're for a salesperson to be ready to convert the lead, to truly convert it. So we really work off of, you know, follow up and activity. And once that's completed and, you know, then we go from there.
Okay. All right. There was one other thing I wanted to let me just kind of go back to this and so you're going to be adjusting your lead scoring. You're talking about the record types and just doing a better job on that and really, really working to improve segmentation, which really the more work you do on segmentation, the better your results are going to be. It's probably the number one thing that a marketer can do to improve results is to focus on segmentation. And also you're working with your agency who's also doing some analysis for you around kind of, you know, what works and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have like a magical short list someplace that says these are the changes that you need to make based on analysis or do you just kind of do it by campaign? I mean, where do you keep your list of changes or things to think about, I guess, is my question.
My head.
In your head?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is, so this is where, because I'm not on the marketing team, but so all this stuff that I see, I do have my little notebook that I write everything down, but I also have, okay, so we started this program on last year on the 19th of April, so I've given myself that year, so I'll start thinking about it on Tuesday.
Okay. I think it's fascinating that you're not on the marketing team, but I would imagine you work very closely with them.
I do, very closely.
And they have gotten to see you as a golden child because of all the great insight that you're able to provide.
Oh, I don't know about that. That would be nice.
Oh, yeah. I think so. I mean, you know, I think a lot of organizations, if you take a look at marketing, they typically don't have data analytical types, you know, available on the team. So having someone in that role in CRM to be able to provide that insight, I think that would be invaluable for them. So let me ask you this. So if you were talking to a marketer, right, who is just, and I'm going to ask the question two ways. One's going to be a CRM administrator, but let's start with a marketer first. If you were talking to a marketer who is just beginning to look at marketing automation and bring it in, what are the lessons learned or what would be the top three guiding points that you would give to that marketer?
That they're looking to bring in, like, to purchase a marketing automation system? Well, number one, I would say definitely. So you do definitely want to purchase a system that integrates with your CRM, so that you can generate the lead and kind of close that loop right there. And don't be afraid to hire consultants. I think people will buy an application or be sold an application. Like, it's really plug and play. Turn it on. You'll be able to customize it, and then you do, and you make your 20 lead sources, and you do this, and then, you know, you come back to try to get something, and, oh, that's not going to work because you didn't do X, Y, and Z. So due diligence is huge, and, like, building the requirement of what you really want, but engaging the experts, I think, is a huge... And we engaged experts to help us with the Eloqua, but we did it on the short term. We did, like, the 5-day quick start, and then we engaged, and then we got a separate kind of maintenance contract with Pedowitz just to keep us afloat and, you know, close that learning curve a little bit. And that has really worked out really nicely for us because we want to be able to do something, but we don't know how. We always have somebody to call. If it's not Salesforce, then it's the Pedowitz group to help us out that way. And so I think engaging consultants is huge. And it's going to make it a better application for yourself. And I would say the same thing if a CRM person was asking me, or if I was talking to a CRM person that they wanted to implement. I'd say, you can buy it, you can turn it on, you can try to configure it yourself, but I think you're better served having an outside consultant or some group come in to help you pull your requirement and make sure you're building to your analytics and what you actually want to get. Because you'd be surprised once you start having the conversations how little you actually know about your business process.
And it really has more to do with the business process and having the technology reflect that the appropriate way more than anything else.
Right. The tool isn't going to solve all things.
That's right. It just won't. Well, Tara, it has been delightful to chat with you today. I really enjoyed it. You know, and I think that, you know, this chasm between sales and marketing, once you bring in marketing automation and can get it tightly integrated with CRM, you know, to your point, 1 of 1 is 3. It's actually a wow, and because it really kind of provides that closed loop. So thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
And next week, April 21st, we'll feature Candace Covington, a good friend of mine from Business Online. So everyone have a great week.
Thank you.